This is a podcast from The Times.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers. Hi. This is The Bugle. Bugle 115. I'm talking to you from London, in Britain, in a new world of cooperation, cuddliness and compromise.
I don't like this at all.
Everything's fine, John. You're going to have to get used to it, mate. This is the new... It's new politics here, John.
Has someone got a Bugle gun pointed at your head, haven't they?
No, I'm just inspired by the moment, John. You know, we are as one as a nation. We are... Ugh. One single consciousness as a species now, with Clegg and Cameron in charge, John.
Oh, boy.
All the old divisions and the old anger put aside. Time is irrelevant. I'm not going to tell you what dates this Bugle is for, because it doesn't matter anymore. We are just drifting through space in holy union. I am Andy Zaltzman here in the blissful... utopianically harmonious city of London, where friend and foe now as one agree on who their favourite snooker player is, where discord is now what a trainee midwife might say when told to cut the umbilical. What? Discord? And by comparison, politically retro city of New York City, New York, it's the man who insults sultans, he batters the doors of ambassadors, he wrenches princes, he executes executives, it's John, the Mahogany Wolf, Oliver!
Hello, Andy! Hello, Buglers! I'm in New York, at least there's still some f***ing friction here, Andy. I'm walking here! Get me a quaffie! Yes, Andy, well, especially because last night we had another near-death experience here, and I was just talking to Paul, who cycled straight into another bomb scare last night.
Oh, really?
In Union Square, some guy had parked his car, there were some canisters in it, police freaked out.
Right.
Turned out he was at the Buzzcocks concerts, this guy. He just parked his car. He works for Con Ed here. And he got out of the concert basically to see the full might of New York's fire and police department descended upon his car with the windows blown out. What a concert. Poor lad.
That's
poor
right.
Lad, and he just wanted to see the Buzzcocks. Poor guy. The bomb squad basically blew his car up.
Couldn't they just have given him a ticket?
Apparently they gave him a lift home. But, you know, he still wakes up this morning to see his car in pieces.
Yeah, has he got a record as well?
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably, Andy. You know why? Well, he failed this time by having no intention to blow his car up at all.
Yeah.
Who knows next time? You can't be too careful.
No smoke without fire, John.
Exactly.
And having blown his car up, there is now some smoke. So this is Bugle 115 for the week beginning May the 17th, for traditionists who want to know these things. That means we are now equal in episode numbers, John, with the Wonder Years.
Is that true?
Apparently so. We're level, and we've done some extras as well.
What an incredible fact
that is.
That's
an amazing fact, isn't it?
115 episodes. What a good show that was, Andy.
I didn't know. My sister liked it. And I was therefore excellent. I sort of took against it. I know you used to have that very funny bit about how you look like Arnold's best friend.
Paul Pfeiffer.
That's
Andy.
Right.
That's right. That was some solid early stand-up.
It was lovely stuff, John. Lovely stuff. I mean, it was a complete catalogue. also, 115, the number of life-size replica bronze body casts of Mitt Romney still left over from the 2008 presidential election merchandising from an initial run of 116 Mitt Romneys. Mm-hmm. The only people to own one, bit of a surprise, the Olsen sisters, John. Well, I think they think they meant to order a bouncy castle, but they're not that familiar with the internet. As always, a section of the Bugle going straight in the bin. This week, a special summer fashion for the slovenly section, including an advertorial on effort-saving clothes, including the perma-shirt. Never bother changing your top again with this wipe-clean torso tarpaulin. Simply hose down once a week or stand outside when it rains. Plus, the official Bugle guide to the hippest and most curious stains to have on your clothes this season, including a high-end luxury organic soup, shows that you're health-conscious and environmentally aware and financially independent, and your choice of flavour says so much about you. Carrot and coriander, I care about the budget deficit. Leek and potato, unreliable and traditional, but capable of extremes of vengefulness. Gazpacho, I'm a globe-trotting playboy. Other stains you might consider, blood, for that air of mystery. Where is it from? Who or what is it from? How long has it been there? The perfect soiling to start conversation. Cement, ditto. Vomit, ditto. And we also ask, leg amputation, is it worth it for ridding your life of those troublesome socks? In the bin. Fashion for the slovenly this week.
Top story this week, the UK is governed once more. Thank God, Andy. Britain once more has a driver at the wheel, even if it's a driver who may well steer some of the neediest citizens in the UK straight into oncoming traffic. Britain has a new leader, Prime Minister David Cameron, and boy oh boy, it's not nice saying those words out loud. But I don't want to be too cynical about this, Andy. Yep. I would like nothing more than for every single instinct I have about him to be wrong. It's sometimes, I think, interesting, I can't remember if I mentioned this before, to put people in context, especially English people, by wondering what they'd be doing in a different era. And during the British Empire, there is no doubt in my mind that David Cameron would have been governing a large section of India by sitting in a rocking chair in front of a large group of Indian workers, sipping on a hot cup of tea with a musket in his lap. All I'm saying is...
And a tiger on his head.
Exactly. All I'm saying is, David Cameron would look good, not only good, but natural, in a pith helmet. And I'm not sure there's any worse thing you could say about someone's character than that.
There has been a lot of complaint, John, about the lack of representativeness of this new cabinet, the coalition cabinet, which contains, I think, over 60% Oxbridge-educated people. And it's been described as the least socially representative cabinet since before the Second World War. And personally...
Oh, that's bad.
It is bad. I mean, the two leaders, basically, are, youngish, white, upper-middle-class men who went to expensive schools and mm-hmm. Oxbridge.
Yeah.
And I just feel, John, that, I was expensively educated. Yes. I went to Oxford.
Yeah.
I've never had a proper job. I feel deeply unlucky that I don't have a cabinet post. I
mean, it is bad, Andy.
What more could I have done, John? It wasn't just that. I'm white. I'm male. I'm telegenically good-looking.
What more can you do apart from being Jewish, Andy?
I'm annoying and I'm patently unqualified. And I'm not in the government. Not even a fucking phone call to explain why not, John. So much for Cameron's famous people skills. I am alienated.
Now, it's important to remember, of course, you mentioned that Cameron is by no means doing this alone, however much he'd like to be doing it alone. Because, of course, no one technically won this election. So, instead of being led by the winner of the election, Britain is now being led by both the man who lost the least and the man who lost the most. And I've got to say, I actually feel quite sorry for David Cameron. Not only considering the scale of the job he's now undertaking, but also the circumstances in which he's going to have to do it. He has to work with a man who he has very little in common with, as well as someone who he spent the last month intensely and openly demonstrating his contempt for. That is, at best, awkward, and at worst, completely unworkable. It's like getting the job of your dreams, then suddenly realising that you're in the middle of a nightmare. Oh, look, I just found a suitcase full of money, and I'm standing in the middle of a shit volcano. It's like the girl of your dreams saying, oh, she'd love to go out for dinner with you, but that you'll both be eating boiled pig's testicles. It's essentially like the British public have surprised Cameron on a Jerry Springer-style show saying, congratulations, we want you to be our Prime Minister. Ah, but we haven't been completely honest with you. Ooh, and we have a little surprise tonight. Uh-oh. We want you to do it with someone you absolutely hate. Please bring out Nick. Yeah! Fight, fight, fight! This isn't a democracy anymore, Andy. It's sick reality television.
Well, it's not just the personal battles between them that they're having to jokily pass off and put behind them, but a lot of the policies and things that were said during the campaign, particularly the Conservatives' main campaign thrust in the last week that we talked about a couple of weeks ago on the Bugle was the dangers of the hung parliament, in which they were bleating on like whinging three-year-olds about how a hung parliament would hand Britain over to the Belgians, result in the Queen having to marry Robert Mugabe and give everyone in Britain incurable hemorrhoids. And now, of course, it turns out, as Cameron says, no, this is all in the best interest of Britain. This is a great, exciting opportunity for new politics. And in a way, I thought they were obviously totally bullshitting, cynically, exploitatively, and obviously bullshitting before. And I think in a way, they've got a point. They've had to be compromised for the first time. The first part of the post system is explicitly designed to avoid people having to discuss stuff. You just railroad it through. And now there's sort of built-in arguments. I think in a way it's quite exciting for democracy. And also, Cameron, he is living up to some of his promises, John, because he said during the campaign that a hung parliament after the general election would lead to unaccountable backroom deals behind closed doors. And, well, for once, he has proved as good as his word. There have been backroom deals made behind closed doors. So fair play to him, John. Fair play in that unfeasibly depressing election ad they had about the danger of the hung parliament party. They said they promised to bring the economy to its knees and send interest rates soaring. And, well, they may well live up to that promise too. And also in their video, they had showed Gordon Brown waving outside number 10 with the message, "This is what a hung parliament looks like." And what they hadn't said in that was actually Brown leaving number 10. So, again, it proved eerily prophetic.
Yeah, that's true. It certainly is going to be interesting. David Cameron, as you mentioned last week, had a huge lead in the polls this time last year and managed to fritter most of that away, as it seemed the UK voter was increasingly concerned about whether he was really a small C Conservative or whether, in fact, he was a Conservative with an uppercase K. I think people were so suspicious of how right-wing he actually was that they've essentially employed Nick Clegg as his conscience. In fact, Nick Clegg should even have to sit physically on Cameron's shoulder all the time, whispering things into his ear like a good angel. "No, David, don't close that youth centre. No, David, don't abolish tax for those earning over £500,000 a year. No, David, don't eat that. It's potpourri. No, David, no."
But in a way, it's worked out the best for everyone. The Conservatives get to be in government, which, you know, they've been dreaming of, all of them, since the womb, generally, which, and for a lot of them, that was not long ago enough, the womb, to say that they're actually properly equipped for the job. But, so they get to be in government, despite having missed the biggest sitting duck since the 35-stone Hawaiian sumo wrestler Konishiki dressed up like a mallard for a pond awareness campaign photo shoot but fell asleep in an armchair. So they get to be in government. And the Liberal Democrats, for the first time...
I'm going to need a little bit longer with that image you just painted.
Mate, I'll just let you...
Give me a second. I'll just see his head, his massive head drooping with the beak on his chest.
Do you remember him? The dump truck.
Of course I remember the dump truck, Andy. I'm not new to sumo.
Of course, he never quite got the better of Chiyono Fuji. He was very much the master in those days. So he had some terrific bouts with Little Tarau, of course, who was small but quick.
Okay, that's enough. You can go on now, Andy.
Well, that came out. Anyway, that was dredged up from... We used to be on terrestrial telly over here when we were kids.
When you dig deep, Andy, it's amazing what you can pull out of your lucky dip bag of knowledge.
Where was I? So the Liberal Democrats, having not been in government and having not done as well as they hoped, get to be in government, and Labour, having looked like they would be completely wiped out electorally, have ended up with not, you know, not a terrible number of MPs. Mm-hmm. They've got rid of Gordon Brown, the albatross around their testicles, and and also their rivals in opposition, the Liberal Democrats, are now Conservatives. So it's basically worked out the best for everyone. It's like a low-grade Shakespeare comedy. But he's rumoured, Cameron, to be about to force through legislation to make himself Prime Minister for life. Quote, "so we can have strong and stable government that the country needs above party interest in the difficult 75 years ahead."
So Gordon Brown offered his resignation to the Queen and drove away in shameful defeat, trying to ignore his children's baffled questions about why they were moving house and where all their security had gone. And then David Cameron asked to form a government and the Queen accepted. And by the way, she really is going through the motions now, Andy. I bet you anything you like that she essentially said, whatever, to both Cameron and Brown. At least make Cameron sweat. Tell him you'll think about it and that he should wait there, then go have a cup of tea, maybe watch the first half of Avatar or something before getting bored, then go back and say, sure, you can be Prime Minister, but only if you walk outside of the car with your underpants over your trousers. It's up to you.
But it's going to be very interesting to see how this coalition plays out, because it's not natural. It's not the obvious political alliance, but they seem to be making, you know, they've built it into government. There's Liberal Democrats throughout government. In fact, over a third of Liberal Democrat MPs having basically joined the Liberal Democrats in order to be in politics without the remotest chance of ever being in power now have to be ministers. And there are going to be compromises. And I guess, as the old saying goes, you can't spell compromise without, oh my. And you can't spell it without PR either. PR, of course, that is the only place PR, proportional representation, is getting a look in. You also can't spell it without prom. And yes. In fact, Cameron and Clegg did look like they were on a prom date when their first press conference the other day. And it did look, actually, when Clegg arrived on the door of Downing, on the front door of Downing Street, it did look like Cameron was about to just go in for the smooch. It really looked like that. But is this a genuine partnership, John? Or is this simply the biggest carve-up since Elvis Presley ordered a whole roast elephant at the Gridiron Cafe in Memphis? Time will tell.
But you're right. It really is going to be important to try and resist the cynicism that kicks in around all of this and give them a chance. So far, they've seemed to have equipped themselves okay. Some of the measures they've put in early have been relatively sensible. Like you say, the fixed term limit is fine. 5 years probably a bit too much. You never want an election to be longer than it takes to wait for a World Cup, because that already feels too long.
Yeah.
Of course, one of the first things that Cameron has banned is his cabinet from bringing their mobile phones into meetings. And okay, that seems more than reasonable, you know, that he's given, as leader of the country, the full undivided attention of those who work for him. But what he hasn't yet revealed is the details to his new policy. Everyone is going to have to hand their phones to him on the way in. And if they say something he disagrees with, he's going to throw their phone out of the window into oncoming traffic. I'm telling you, Andy, he's significantly more authoritarian than he's letting on. No, I've got to be positive. Positive.
But also the 5% pay cut for ministers, which, you know, is a gesture.
Yes.
And will not entirely resolve the deficit on its own.
It's not nothing.
That's
nothing.
Slightly suggests they're intending to do a 5% less good job. but we'll see. There's a lot of people complaining that all these things, that because it's a compromise government, people aren't getting what they voted for. And, well, the thing is, what they voted for didn't win. And people say, oh, we didn't vote for this. We voted Conservative, but we didn't vote to have Nick Clegg in power. Well, when they start saying, you know, if you voted Green, complaining that the Greens' one MP isn't forcing through an extensive legislative programme of wind farms. We need to grow up. We've been complaining for years in this country that all the parties are the same. Now, as soon as there's a coalition, people say, oh, it's never going to work, they're too different. We've been complaining about, you know, childish politics and adversarial politics, and as soon as everything gets a bit touchy-feely, we say, oh, it was better before. I want them to smack each other in the face. But this thing about the lack of representation of women and ethnic minorities in cabinet, we now have the British cabinet has one more woman in it than the Afghanistan cabinet.
Ooh.
Which
that's rough. That is a rough juxtaposition.
It's not great. It's not great. And one of the women in it is Baroness Warsi, Saida Warsi, who is a minister without portfolio. Now, which is basically the minister for stuff and shit like that. And apparently she's wandering around Westminster and Whitehall today just with a bag of tools, asking if any shelves needed putting up or anything. And she's a life peer. She failed to win a seat at the 2005 election and was made a life peer. And responding to claims that it was a tokenistic appointment of a British Asian, a Muslim and a woman, Cameron replied, "No way, Jose. I hadn't even noticed she was of Asian origin, Muslim or female. That is the kind of modern guy I am. I don't see these things. I just assume since she was in the room that she must have been an old chum from Eton and Oxford playing a prank." And if you think that saying "no way, Jose" was over-colloquial in a Prime Minister or a press conference, to be fair, he was responding to an accusation to that effect from Jose Reyes, the New York Mets shortstop, who's moonlighting as the world politics correspondent for for the New York Times.
Okay, well, I don't mind what he does in his spare time, Andy. I just don't think he can bat at three anymore because it's not working.
It's not working out.
It's not working.
How are the Mets doing this?
Well, bad start of the season. Then, you know, Ike Davis came in on first base, Andy, and he's been a revelation.
Really?
This new guy, Carter, looks like he's great, even if just as a pinch hitter.
Right.
It's not terrible, but the problem is we're in a division with the Phillies, Andy, and they're going to run away with it.
Sad days. Sad days.
The point stands about Reyes, though, Andy. He can't bat at three. He's made for a leadoff spot.
Other surprise appointments to the cabinet include the late Harold Macmillan, a Tory Prime Minister from 1957 to 63, back in government 23 years after his death as Under Secretary of State for Inner City Development. You know, is he a stooge? I don't know. Jack Bauer, the fictional star of hit but about to finish TV series 24, confirmed as Minister for Dealing with the Terrorist Threat. Is this why the series is ending, John? For Bauer to take up a career in British politics, either way, with his human rights record. It's a very controversial appointment. former Olympic champion, former Olympic javelin champion Tessa Sanderson is Minister for Javelin Throwing. No arguments there. Her portfolio also includes all aspects of training for javelin competitions and trying to re-energise the flagging UK javelin manufacturing industry. She said at a press conference yesterday, by 2015, I want every household in Britain to own a javelin and to have a javelin thrower to throw it. Also, Sir Mix-a-Lot, now Lord Mix-a-Lot, as a life peer, Minister for Roads, sellout, another bloody old Italian. And most surprising of all, sticking with George Osborne as Chancellor. His career before politics, lest we forget, included a short spell as a freelance journalist, a stint as a data inputter entering the names of people who died on an NHS register, and apparently folding sheets in a department store.
Okay.
And then politics, and now Chancellor of the Exchequer. Now, you might think that's a bit like asking a puppy to perform brain surgery or hiring Lionel Richie to be a surrogate mother for you. But you know, let's not be cynical, John. Let's be positive. Maybe
yes,
that puppy will turn out to be a magic puppy with incredible neurosurgery skills.
It could happen.
Just don't drop your slobbery tennis ball in there, Rover. And maybe Lionel Richie has a functioning womb. We just don't know. All I know is that Osborne has never really had a proper job. And he's an inspiration to people like me who have never had a proper job.
Other awkward relationship news now. And Andy, never mind Nick Clegg and David Cameron being thrust together. Bugle favourite Silvio Berlusconi has, well, I mean, he's been quiet by his standards recently, Andy. Not getting hit in the face with any more miniature cathedrals, nor sleeping with any more teenage models who he momentarily and repeatedly mistook for his wife. perhaps it was little snafus like that that have caused him getting divorced. Now, Berlusconi's wealth was estimated by Forbes at $6.5 billion in March, putting him at number 70 in the rankings of the world's billionaires. Pretty good. His taxable earnings in 2007, taxable earnings.
This is hypothetical, of course.
That's right. Total €14.5 million, still actually a huge drop on the €139 million he declared in 2006. But, you know, that is also just what he declared. Because, as I think we both know deep down, all of us know, you have to understand that paying tax for Berlusconi is like bungee jumping. He can understand in theory why people do it. It's just not something he can ever see himself personally being interested in trying. But it actually looks like Silvio is going to be able to sidestep the biggest divorce settlement in history, the potential biggest settlement, just like he sidestepped Italian justice for the last 20 years. After a five-hour court hearing over last weekend with his understandably furious wife, Veronica Lario revised her demands for maintenance of £43 million a year to just £3.6 million. And first, that's a big request. Straight off the bat, 43 million in yearly maintenance. What the f*** is she, an international space station? I'm not saying she doesn't deserve it. No, she, let's remember, all of us, was married to Silvio Berlusconi, which may be judged by history to be one of the most incredible acts of human endurance of all time.
But, to be fair, self-inflicted.
Yes.
Largely.
Yes. How did he negotiate this down? Well, that's a good question. First, she's allowed to keep their £67 million villa near Milan, but it can't just be that, Andy. Perhaps she's negotiated being allowed to kick him in the balls once a year, and that would probably be worth it. She's already incredibly rich now. No, she's comfortable. Now, what she's adding now to her over £3.5 million income a year is quality of life. Because she could look forward to that, like Christmas and birthdays. Have a little countdown advent calendar on your fridge. Only 16 days now until I can kick Silvio in the balls. Oh, what's behind this door? Oh, look, it's a cartoon of Silvio buckled over wincing in pain. That's a good one. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Do you think she'd do it at Christmas? Or do you think she'd maybe space
no,
it out?
Space it out. Definitely space it out. Yeah. Definitely space it out.
Yeah. But do you think she'd have a special boot made for it with?
Oh no, question.
Maybe a series of boots with great churches of Italy on. So.
Right on the toe. That's a great idea, and I think a new one each year. Again, yeah. Remember, £3.6 million a year.
Right.
That's a huge settlement, so she can easily afford a brand new pointy shoe with
the Duomo in Florence on.
Duomo.
Yep, I think that's what he calls his member.
And then they. And then it's more likely he does than he doesn't. And then you could then have that shoe in like encased for the rest of the year. Yeah. Just line them up over the years. Oh, God, I remember.
They shift on eBay, wouldn't they?
I remember 2014. I got some real backlift on that. That's when I realised it's the follow through that really gets to him.
250 grand a month she's in line for.
Pretty good.
Our Prime Minister only gets 200 grand a year, John. But I think being married to Berlusconi,
yes.
I mean, it's a much tougher job.
That's what you've got to understand.
It is a 15 times worse job.
Yes, definitely.
Let's put that in context as well. 250,000. Do you know why that figure was chosen?
Why?
Because that is what, in today's money, Germany was paying after World War One as reparations under the Treaty of Versailles. And look how that turned out. I mean, it's not, but the point stands. I can't imagine what it's like being married to Silvio Berlusconi. Well, I can, in fact, and I have, which is why I'm increasingly reticent in social situations.
Crucible of Civilization news now. And, well, it's just what Plato would have wanted, Andy, for Greece to one day be on the verge of bankruptcy, beset with strikes and riots, and threatening to take down the entire EU economy with it. If anyone had actually bothered to read the whole of the Republic, they'd find it all there at the end. In fact, I believe Plato's final words in that book are, and I bet none of you have actually read this far, which is a shame because it's important to point out that in early 21st century Greece, people are likely to be almost allergic to paying taxes, and that's going to be a problem. And they all lived irresponsibly ever after. The end. Plato.
Well, this is a classic tale, John. We've seen it so often in the world, of a nation overspending on a war and then being hammered financially after it's finished. Only in Greece's case, that war was 2,400 years ago, and it still hasn't got back on its feet.
The protests in Greece that we've seen were sparked by the government's agreement to adopt austerity measures in exchange for a €110 billion bailout loan from the EU and the IMF. Essentially, the austerity measure states that no one in Greece is going to be allowed to have any fun for the next 40 to 60 years. Greece plans to freeze public sector workers' pay, make cuts in civil servants' benefits, hike sales tax and fuel duty, raise the retirement age and reduce pensions. And the reason for this is that Greece has essentially been living like an obnoxious trust fund teenager, way beyond its means for years, and its rising level of debt has placed a huge strain on the country's economy. Tax evasion alone is estimated to cost the Greek government at least €20 billion a year. Many public sector workers retire in Greece in their early 50s. Now, this is all totally ridiculous. It seems that the retirement age hasn't been changed in Greece since Aristotle. And Greece's government says the nation faces sacrifices in a, and I quote, choice between collapse or salvation. And I have to say that, judging from the scenes in Greece over the last week, I don't think the Greeks have quite come to a decision on that one yet. I think they're just wondering whether, you know, having come this far, they should just pull a Thelma and Louise and continue not paying tax and having a grand old time right off the side of a cliff. They're less keen on tightening their belts than taking their belts off entirely and drunkenly whirling them around their heads while pretending to be helicopters.
I think the great problem, though, is they haven't charged commission for democracy. You know, they invented it. They should have intellectual property rights over it.
Every time
anyone does a bit of democracy, we should get 10p in the post.
Yeah.
Democracy and cock jokes. Of course, they're very much the inventors of the cock joke. The
You're
Greeks.
Right.
Yeah, it was total civilization. Had everything. Something for everyone. Democracy, philosophy, big wangs.
That should be the title, Andy, of your Greek textbook in the future. Democracy, Philosophy, Big Wangs. Well, the entire story of Greece.
So that was, of course, awesome. Alcibiades, the controversial 5th century BC politician. He, his downfall was caused about by him breaking the wang off a sculpture.
Is that true?
That is true.
You're using your degree! Is that really true?
That is, yeah. Yeah, that is true.
What was it? Why did he do it?
Well, it was they had these thing called herms, which are little sculptures, kind of right. Religious sculptures, and they had wangs. They had, you know, big penises, and he snapped one off.
Why?
Because I think he was pissed. And
was he like, trying to stand up, and it came off in his hand, or did he think, I'm having one?
I'm not sure
wangs.
History records it. I'm just going to type Alcibiades and penis into Google.
Oh God!
Yeah, well, it was according to no less a source than Wikipedia, the spiritual home of the Bugle, in 415 BC, the night before the Athenian fleet set sail for its fateful Sicilian expedition, which is basically where Greece started going wrong.
Yeah,
the herms, these little statues, were vandalised, and Alcibiades was accused of being the originator of this crime of snapping wangs off herms. Your emails now, and we have none of your emails from this week because the server's down or something. What happened, Chris?
It's actually got something to do with Tom.
It's Tom's fault.
It has a lot to do with Tom.
What did he do?
He left.
He's f***ed it up.
Yep.
And it's got nothing to do with me.
Right. Oh, well, I'm sorry,
Chris. This is what the government's going to say, isn't it? In a few months' time, when everything goes through, they're going to say, it's Gordon's fault. It's Gordon Brown's fault. You're just like that.
Yeah.
Just blaming the outgoing regime.
That is true.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes, though, it is the outgoing regime's fault, Andy. that's important to remember.
So no emails this week. But we're going to try and set up new access code for Chris.
Thanks to everyone who sent theirs in the last 7 days. Yeah. They will be read.
They will be read assiduously.
Be read at some point.
Yeah.
And rest assured that Tom will pay for this in blood.
So instead of that, I'm going to merely draw your attention again to the Bugle Twitter feed and also Hugo Chavez's Twitter feed, which if you'd been reading a couple of days ago, you'd have read him saying, Bueno, creo que es hora de descansar un rato. Buenos días a todas y a todas. Gracias por sus mensajes y su confianza en este soldado es lo que soy. Viva Venezuela! he's the only person that Hello Buglers is following, Hugo Chavez.
Yes.
I've no idea what that meant. But,
do I need to
edit
anything
good.
Out of that?
Yeah. I've no idea. I don't know what it... You know, if it's on, it's public domain. I was quoting a world leader. That's not illegal, is it?
No, it's fine.
That's not illegal. Of course, the Bugle Twitter feed. All the latest things that aren't happening in the formation of the new government, including Vince Cable and Nick Clegg undergoing initiation at Tory HQ a couple of days ago. No details, but a hooded man was seen entering with a negligee and a bottle of bleach. More like that on the Bugle Twitter feed, at Hello Buglers, and thanks for those who've sent nice messages via Twitter. I don't fully know how to respond to them yet with these funny little letters like FF. What does that mean, Chris? What does FF mean?
I don't know.
Right. I don't know.
Is it complimentary?
Was it preceded by a hash?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's trending.
Right.
Andy, you're the the explorer, the pioneer.
I'm like Captain Scott and Amundsen rolled into one, heading for the South Pole of technology. So do keep your emails coming into the Bugle at timesonline.co.uk, and if Chris can sort his life out, we'll be able to read them and read some of them back to you in a couple of weeks. We're off next week, so it's not going to be next week. So we're going to have a 3 week backlog. What the hell?
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
Is that, well, don't say sorry unless you've got Tom sitting on your lap now and your hand up his arse operating his mouth and he's saying it. Because I'll only take it from Tom, Chris. And there's the second image that I'm going to need a while.
Yeah, this is it. I'm thinking about it, so it's happened.
Sport now! Sport!
Sport!
Sport! Yay!
Oh, I love sport, Andy. Yeah. I just, you know, sometimes it's worth mentioning. Just reasserted yourself. I just love it so much.
It's better than life.
It's more important than life.
More important than life, I would
Yeah,
say.
Obviously, it's much more important. You know, it can give, it can take away, and it can coddle.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's another a great thing often happens in sports is pitch invasions, Andy, which I think both you and I support.
Yeah.
Basically.
I love a pitch invasion.
Yeah, it's people being stupid. Yeah. That's what sport is for. And the Phillies, the how to put this politely? I think I can't. The scumbag Phillies, Andy. I can't stand the Phillies. I can't stand them.
Why not, John?
I can't get into it now. I know. It's amazing how quickly I can adopt this loathing. Anyway, the Phillies, a 17-year-old fan, ran onto the field down in Philadelphia, and he was tasered. He was tasered by security, who I don't think had quite realised how young he was. And basically, there was the justification for this was saying, well, he could have stabbed someone, which is obviously not true. But they also said, well, this at least will dissuade anyone from doing it again. And I will say, Andy, credit to the Phillies fans here, because the very next day, it, as if in response, another Phillies fan ran straight onto the field, ran around for a bit before giving himself up for arrest, only for the police to, when searching him, find marijuana in his pockets. So he knew he was going to get arrested, Andy. That was his entire plan. And he didn't think, oh, I should probably just check to see whether I've got anything illegal on my person before I hand myself in. I admire in theory him saying, well, I'm going to show them. I'll show them exactly how much we're listening to them. But please, you know, think about it carefully. Also, there was another magnificent moment in baseball this week as well. It wasn't so much a pitch invasion as during the Oakland A's Texas Rangers game, Max Ramirez hit a home run shot. Now, Texas Stadium, there's a kind of a grassy area, like sloped grassy area, where fans, if the ball goes in there, will basically just dive on to it, run around, and they'll all try and steal the ball. Adults will all try and get this little baseball. And many of these adults will then not give it to a child. But yeah, basically, there was a huge pile-on, and the people were pulled off, and there was one guy at the bottom, and he stood up. He was on the big jumbotron. And he flipped the double bird at the entire stadium. Just two birds. And bear in mind, he was a Rangers fan, Andy. He's swearing at his own team, his own stadium, and his own fans with a ball in his hand. What a mate, I guess it was just instinct. He's going, well, I got the ball, so I suppose everyone can go f*** themselves. So excellent behaviour from baseball fans
big
this week, Andy.
Yeah.
Outstanding. Keep it up!
So just time for this week's Bugle forecast. Well, I'm off next week. I'm on holiday, going to Italy with a family to try to detoxify after 5 weeks of unadulterated democracy.
Congratulations, Andy.
Too much for any man, John.
Are you going to eat a whole buffalo mozzarella again?
I'd imagine I'll eat several. I might even eat a whole buffalo. So the forecast is in 2 weeks' time when we're back. Yes. Will Britain still have a coalition government? Will it last that long? After all, it's on the ropes already, John.
It's on the ropes, Andy!
What do you reckon? How long is it going to last?
Well, it's on the ropes, Andy. Can't last. It cannot last. And it's not what we voted for. This is not what I wanted. Of course it can't last, Andy. Of course it will collapse, and you'll be returning to a country in flames.
Just total carnage.
Yep.
Gordon Brown back in Downing Street.
Yeah, exactly.
With a machine gun over
his
shoulder.
Blood painted across his face, holding a conch shell and making everyone think that's okay.
A great big moustache.
Well, have a lovely holiday, Andy.
Thanks, John. You too.
I won't. We're finishing writing the book.
All right, okay.
It's going to be f***ing tense. But still, that's not the point. That should not affect the enjoyment of your holiday.
By the time I get back, it's going to be nearly the World Cup.
Oh, that's true.
Sensational. Doesn't get any better than that.
Something to get excited about.
Yeah.
Come on, England! Have a lovely 2 weeks, Buglers.
We will, next week, we'll have a stand-in episode with some stuff that wasn't quite good enough to get in previous episodes.
Sell it, Andy, sell it.
Yeah. Give it the big sell. It's the coalition episode next week. Yep. The compromise that isn't quite what anyone wanted.
Don't be cynical.
It's a new age, John. It's a new age. Let's be
give
positive.
People a chance to fail. Bye.
Bye-bye.
This is a Times Online podcast. For more podcasts, go to timesonline.co.uk/podcasts.